They are three distinct communities in our region, yet they have many of the same issues. And today, we get to meet those who are trying to solve those issues. Welcome to The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. I'm Ron Ropiak. We invite you to join us on Twitter. We're at Full Story WSHU. And you can follow us and add your comments, and you can do the same on our Facebook page, Full Story WSHU. Now, later on in this hour, we're going to speak with Dr. Martin Cantor, the former Economic Development Commissioner for Suffolk County, and we'll also talk with David Martin, the mayor of Stamford. But we'd like to start our program today with Tony Harp, the mayor of the second largest city in Connecticut by population, New Haven. Mayor Harp, welcome. Thank you for your time.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's really an honor to be on your show.
Thank you. What is the number one issue you think that you are facing in New Haven?
Well, you know, I think that we have a number of issues, but perhaps the biggest issue that we have right now is making sure that we're growing jobs in our community, in our region, for the people who live in New Haven.
So jobs number one.
I think jobs is number one, although we are probably doing better than many of the cities in Connecticut. We want to make sure that we have, I would imagine, one of the larger employers in our city, the largest actually in the state, is Yale New Haven Hospital. And yet we have populations in some of our challenged neighborhoods who have high levels of unemployment. And so making sure that everyone in our city has access to good-paying jobs is something that we continue to work on and are hoping that as our state rebounds, that it would mean better jobs for people who live here in our city.
You were one of the earliest and biggest supporters of then-candidate Ned Lamont, now the governor. Do you have any extra pull with the new administration because of your support?
Well, you know, one of the things that I do know about Governor Lamont is that when I call him, he'll return the phone call. I think he recognizes how important to the overall growth of our state that our urban areas are. And so when he ran for governor, he was one of the first among those who ran to understand how critically important to Connecticut our airport is. And so he supported Tweed's development and getting more air traffic into that airport so that more people could come in and out. I told you that jobs was an issue. We grow businesses here because of Yale University and the science that happens there. So we had a pharmaceutical company here that was growing, doing very well. But they had trouble getting people in and out of our city. So they moved their sales force to Boston. Their executive office finally moved. Research and development is still here. But if we're going to grow businesses and they're going to have sales forces that have to travel the United States as well as the world, we've got to have air traffic that can get people out of here in a reasonable amount of time and back here as well. So right now, if a lot of the people fly out of New York airspace, and because of the traffic on our highways, it can take 2 to 3 hours to get to LaGuardia and longer to get to Kennedy and even longer to get to Norwalk. And yet that's what many people in southern Connecticut are doing. And so we think it's critically important that Tweed Airport became a more viable airport. We are the only other commercially recognized airport in the state. And I've gotten good response from Governor Lamont and from the Connecticut Airport Authority that, in fact, they are going to look at how they can build upon this being the second airport, second most important in terms of commercial airspace. And I think that will help grow New Haven, grow our region, and grow our state.
You mentioned Yale. Now, during the school year, about a quarter of the city's residents are students at Yale. And someone said to me quite recently that Yale and New Haven are one and the same. I honestly thought that was overstating it, but I understood what he meant, which was that the city and the university are always going to be linked. Is that accurate?
Well, absolutely. If you sort of look at our city, actually before there was a state of Connecticut, there was a New Haven colony and a Yale University. And so, so much so that Yale is written into the constitution of the state as a not-for-profit with three other colleges. And so, they're not going anywhere. They're expanding throughout our region because they now have a West Haven / Orange campus. But they're also building here in our city. They just built two new colleges, and they're expanding their student body as well. What they do for New Haven is critically important. As I said before, often, particularly in the School of Medicine, where there are new discoveries made every day that new businesses emanate from. So they are building those businesses. Sometimes those businesses are here in New Haven, but sometimes they're actually in some of our surrounding towns. Yale itself often uses hotels for meetings that are outside of our city. We're trying to actually build a bigger hotel so that they'll stay here, but they're really important to our entire state. And they've recognized that we have to improve our overall education opportunities for young people in our town. So they've developed the New Haven Promise program now. Over 1,000 students are either in New Haven Promise or have graduated from New Haven Promise, and they are the workers of today and the future for our city. So the relationship is strong. I would say that it's like a good marriage. We don't always see eye to eye, but we find ways to work things out.
Mayor, we have about 5 minutes left. You're talking about Yale and the students. Obviously, there's been an issue the last number of years in Connecticut where the young, the youth, are leaving the state. How do you convince them that New Haven is a good place to establish a business, to put down roots?
Well, you know, one of the things that we try to do in the city is to make sure that it's easy for businesses to become established. The other thing that we try to do is to make sure both at the college level and at even the high school level, that students have the kind of skills that the new businesses are looking for. So we're working with Microsoft. We have a coding academy for young people in our high schools here. We have something between the Gateway Community College and Southern Connecticut State College, which is what we call a bio ladder, so that young people in those programs are learning the skills for emerging bioscience businesses that are being developed here in New Haven and our region. And so we are doing what we can. We're urging the state to also support those initiatives. And we find that when we do those things, when our Workforce Development Board actually provides for adults opportunities to learn these new skills, that it makes us attractive to businesses across the country that want to have an Eastern face, but also across the world. We recently went to China and we met with businesses there, and one of them has come to look at New Haven. One, because we have a very educated workforce here in the area, and because of the synergies that exist between the universities here, Yale being the strongest, but there are others, Southern, Quinnipiac is in Hamden, and again, a gateway, so Albertus Magnus, so that we believe that we are fertile ground for those businesses that want to grow and develop, and that we do all that we can to assure, particularly, that the younger population has the skills that are needed for the businesses of today and tomorrow.
Mayor, we only have one and a half minutes left, and I know it's a gigantic question. I hope you come in to the studio in the near future, and we could spend an hour talking about these things. But New Haven is obviously has been home to many of the progressives in the Democratic Party. One of their main causes nowadays is leading the fight against climate change. What is New Haven doing in that regard?
So we have joined the Climate Accord. We're doing everything that we can to reduce our emissions here in the city. We've changed all of our lighting to LED lights. We are doing work to uphold and sustain our shoreline because we're a shoreline city. We are doing something, I didn't even know what these things were called, bioswales, to actually have the water that comes through us, because we get a lot of water, thankfully, but we are building over 200 of those so that it can actually go into our ground and relieve our overall pipe system. And so we are doing all that we can. We're working with people in their homes so they can develop rain gardens at home, and we have we're working with to develop our electricity through I've even forgotten what they're called, but at any rate, we are doing everything that we can to reduce our emissions. To we're going to be working very soon on trying to get people to separate their garbage and do that kind of thing, so that our landfills are the impact on those are reduced. And so we work with that part of our progressive wing, and try to mitigate the impact of modern human living to the degree possible.
New Haven Mayor Tony Harp. Mayor, thank you very much. And as I said, please come into our studio sometime in the near future. We'd love just to sit down with you for the full hour.
I'd love it, too. You take care. Thank you so much for the invitation.
Thank you. This is The Full Story. When we come back, we'll speak with Dr. Martin Kanter. Stay with us. Dr. Martin Kanter is the director of the Long Island Center for Socioeconomic Policy and is the former Economic Development Commissioner for Suffolk County. I should mention that we were hoping to speak with Suffolk County Executive Steve Ballone today, but he's attending the State of the State Address in Albany, and hopefully we can speak with him sometime in the future. Dr. Kanter, welcome back to the program.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be here.
What's the number one issue facing the economy on Long Island, specifically Suffolk County?
I think how to make it affordable to the new people. I know I was on your show when we had those five young millennials in.
We were talking about the millennials and what they're doing with the new economy.
Exactly. And, in fact, this morning I was at a seminar. Actually, I was on a panel talking about the economy of the island, and the same topic came up. You know, Long Island has become increasingly unaffordable for both the seniors that live here and the young people who want to move in. So I think the number one issue is how do we create the kind of jobs that the future workforce of Long Island will access at the right salary, so they can afford to live here and keep the economy going as the baby boomers retire, and that's a big issue.
Before we talk about the youth, tell me a little bit more about the breakfast meeting you had today. What are the business leaders telling you?
Well, the business leaders, out of a series of 1 to 10, they felt about 7.3 that they're comfortable with the economy. And that makes sense, because consumer confidence nationally is about that same level as well as locally. I mean, everybody feels good. They're working, bringing home money. The unemployment rate is low. The household budgets are being balanced. So you know, if you're, the old expression, you know, a recession is defined as your neighbor's out of work. A depression is defined when you are out of work. So right now, everybody's working. So nobody feels anything like a recession or a depression. So that's pretty much where everybody is. That they're comfortable where they are. It's not that they're not concerned about the future, but they're comfortable about where they are.
I do love a numbers person. It's not 7 or 7.5. It's 7.3. Very accurate.
well, you know, 7.3 is a big difference from 7.0 or 6.9. You know, so yeah, if you're a numbers person, they matter. And especially in data-driven research, one-tenth of a percent does matter.
Exactly. You were mentioning it before, and according to many reports, young people are not just leaving Long Island and Suffolk County. They're leaving Connecticut. They're going for the bright lights, the big cities. How do you keep them here? I know you mentioned affordable housing, but how do you attract them to areas such as ours?
Well, you know, it was very interesting. I listened to the mayor's responses. And it was very interesting. It's no matter where you go in the Northeast or even down the Mid-Atlantic states, you're going to have the same issues. You know, affordable. Everybody talks about affordable housing, which is important. People need to. You know, I always point to the fact that many people who own homes, whether they be in Connecticut or Long Island, couldn't afford to buy them today on the salaries that they're earning. Because the houses have housing costs have been driven exponentially since the 90s, whereas wages, when adjusted for inflation, really haven't increased dramatically since the year 2000. So the question is, yes, you need housing that's affordable, but the most important thing is that we have to attract the jobs that the next generation workforce is attracted to. And those jobs have to pay wages that meet their salary expectations, and require skills that these young people have. And we're not doing a good job of that. The economy has turned from manufacturing and skill oriented to retail, tourism, the healthcare industry. None of those are higher paying jobs. What's happening is that. Our downtowns, and we're starting to address that on Long Island, our downtowns need to have walkability, need to have sizzle. I always point to Austin, Texas, which is an up-and-coming downtown with enlightened thinking, affordable housing. They're attracting the kind of jobs young people want to work in and have the kind of nightlife that young people want to enjoy. You know, when I was younger, I grew up in Brooklyn. And I used to go into New York City for the nightlife because Brooklyn just didn't have it. Well, the same things happen on Long Island. People who want a nightlife, you know, go into the city. Yes, our downtowns have bars and pubs and things like that, but the real sizzle is in the city. And that's why housing prices in the city have gone up. So we have to do a better job of making the workplaces where young people want to work and attracting the companies where young people want to work at.
And it's funny how times have changed. You referred to it as the city, meaning Manhattan. There are many Manhattanites. Now the young ones who leave the city, they go to Brooklyn when they go out.
That's my daughter. My youngest daughter is a special ed teacher who lives in Park Slope. And I have to tell you, I love Park Slope. And you're right. Park Slope is where Manhattan used to be. And Brooklyn never had a Park Slope or never was a place where young people would live. So the place is teeming with young people. And I think that's what we need to do on Long Island. Long Island, some of the cities in Connecticut, they just don't have the infrastructure and the walkability that young people want to live in. And that's what we have to change. We have to change the flavor of where we live.
Before we talk about what kind of jobs are higher paying, I want to bring up something that you mentioned two comments back. You were talking about taxes, specifically property taxes. That's always a hot topic for homeowners. And obviously the recent federal tax bill hurt Long Island homeowners a lot because of what you were saying. They bought their homes, they went up in value, and now there's the cap on salt. How can those homeowners be helped?
Well, you know, I was asked that question this morning. And I said, you know, if I had a magic wand, I would scrap how Long Island raises money and start all over again. And instead of the property tax, which has ceased to be progressive, because it used to be that if you could afford the house, you could afford the property taxes. Today, you can't afford the house and you can't afford the property taxes. So I would do a regional income tax and make it progressive. You earn more money, you pay more money. You earn less money, you pay less money. And that goes a long way to make an area affordable and attractive. And if you make more money, you can afford a house. Now, that won't change the lack of the SALT deduction because that's state and local taxes. And that's a travesty because the Northeast region, Connecticut, New Jersey, New York, pay more money to the federal government than we get back in federal aid. And part of that equity balancing over the years was to allow these high property tax states to have a greater deduction on their on their federal taxes, and the Congress did away with that. Now, you know, they'll offer the fact that they raised the standard exemption to $24,000 for a married family, for a family of two, rather. But by increasing that, they took away the personal exemptions for you, your wife, and your children. So, you know, we got a double whammy. We might have had an increased standard exemption, but we lost the tax benefits of family, and we lost the tax benefits of owning our home. And that has to be changed in the Congress. Otherwise, there'll be a greater disparity between what the Northeast, specifically New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, sent to Washington and don't get back.
What's your guess? Will the cap be rescinded or at least raised?
You know, I'd like to believe that there's a deal to be made. But unfortunately, nobody wants to make a deal in Washington. Political parties. Look, I'm a Democrat, and I'm going to talk against my own party. I really think that they ought to sit down, give Trump his wall, start negotiating on all these important issues. The wall is small compared to the economic value of the SALT deduction for this region. And I think that we have to get back to governing and stop being stop stonewalling, if you will, the legislative bargaining process, which nobody's doing.
Dr. Martin Kanter is the director of the Long Island Center for Socioeconomic Policy, is the former Economic Development Commissioner for Suffolk County. You're listening to The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. Dr. Kanter, you were mentioning specific type of jobs. You say, okay, we've grown in retail, tourism, and so on, but we need to have higher paying jobs to attract and to keep our young people here. What kind of jobs?
Well, they have to be. We have to do a better job of retaining our manufacturing sector, and I know that's probably an issue in Connecticut as well, because the manufacturers, in a survey that I conducted for one of the technology business groups, 30% said they're going to leave the region because taxes are too high. With technology, right now, those kind of jobs pay a lot of money. Engineering jobs. Look at the jobs that Amazon is bringing to Queens. Those are the kind of jobs we need to bring to Connecticut, Long Island, the whole region, and that will help young people. $150,000 a year job, as Amazon is promising, is the kind of work we need. Not $29,000 a year tourism jobs or journalism jobs, which don't pay all that much, or healthcare jobs, which don't pay all that much. Because healthcare is driven by reimbursement rates and government, and they're trying to drive the rates down. If you drive the reimbursement rates down, you're driving down what you pay people. So we need to focus in on the value-added jobs, and that's in technology and manufacturing, biotech, the stuff that you manufacture and put in bottles and ship out. Now, the problem that you have in terms of that is that the infrastructure on Long Island, which doesn't have sewers, is hard to retain those biotech jobs because the infrastructure for biotech manufacturing is in New Jersey. And I'm sure the same thing in certain of the communities up in Connecticut. So we have to create an infrastructure which will allow for the expansion of biotech jobs. But the most important thing is that unless we deal with the region's expense of operating here, we're not going to keep the companies that are creating those higher-paying jobs. And that's the issue. So it's really a double-edged sword. We want to keep the value-added jobs here, which tend to be, you know, things that you make and you export. We want to keep those here, but people who make those things and export want to work in a region where it's not expensive, and that's why they're leaving. So, and that's why Austin works, because the taxing structure in Texas is totally different than here. That's why when Grumman Corporation was a big aerospace company on Long Island, they moved to Florida, St. Augustine, because they had a plant down there that it cost less money to make, less money to live and operate down there. That's what we need to do as a region. And I know that you talked about with the mayor, you know, the Green New Deal. Well, the Green New Deal costs money. You know, and we all want, you know, to deal with climate change, and we all want to have a great environment But people have to step back and say, well, what's it going to cost us? And where's the money going to come from? And is it going to come from taxes? Well, I just got finished telling you that taxes are one of the reasons that businesses leave. So that's something that that we have to talk about. I know the governor, Governor Cuomo, is saying, well, maybe we should tax, you know, the millionaires. Well, you know, businesses reside, businesses operate where their owners want to live. And if you tax the owners, they're going to move someplace and take their businesses elsewhere. Same thing, just look at ballplayers. Why do you think ballplayers like to work in certain cities or in certain states? Because their wages aren't taxed as much as they are in New York.
It's amazing. So, it's amazing how many of them live in Florida and Texas.
That's exactly right. Bingo. That's exactly right. Because the taxing structure is more favorable to them. So if we you know, we have to stop being naive and think that we need to tax, and that's the be-all, end-all. You know, I know the Congresswoman Octavio Cortez says, let's use 70%, you know, let's have a 70% top tax rate. And 59% of the Americans agree. But guess who those 59% are? The ones who aren't making money that would be taxed at 70%. So we have to start thinking ourselves as an entire community and stop thinking ourselves as little silos and saying, tax the other guy, not me. And that's the biggest problem. You know, there was a comic strip when I was growing up in the New York Post called Pogo. And the one thing that stayed with me is Pogo said, we have met the enemy and they
and,
is us.
And they is us. It's one of all-time classics. Dr. Cantor, we have 3 minutes left. The islands, okay. The island's demographics are changing pretty rapidly, too. You saw that reflected in the past midterm elections. How is that impacting the economy?
Well, that's big. You know, a lot of the people, we're getting a more diverse. We're getting we received 5,000 unaccompanied children from Ecuador and South America, and they're staying with families that are here and just starting out on the immigration ladder like we all did. I mean, my grandparents came from Russia, and they started out you know, running a push cart in Brooklyn during the recession. Depression, rather. So what's happening is as new people come in, they don't bring with them the skill sets that contribute to a higher economy. They learn and they work themselves into that. But that's what we're getting. So that's because, you know, we need more people to contribute to a local economy than we have right now. We used to have it with the baby boomers because that was the big generation that we went from blue-collar workers to technology. And right now we have to create an economy where the new people that come in, they can now get onto that ladder outside and move up to the middle class. And right now, because of the taxing structure and the cost of living on Long Island, it's very, very difficult for these folks to move up that ladder to the middle class. And that's where the middle class is where the economy really, really booms.
Just with the 30 seconds that we have left, do you feel optimistic for the future?
Guardedly optimistic. I'm not ready to say that this boom we're experiencing will go on forever. I think ultimately the bill is going to have to be paid for how we spend, how we tax. So I think that's coming down the road. Maybe not this year, maybe the year after, but it's certainly, I do believe it's coming down the road.
So would you say 7.3%?
Down the road?
Just on the optimistic scale,
I would probably go 6.9.
Dr. Martin Cantor, he is the director of the Long Island Center for Socioeconomic Policy, and is the former Economic Development Commissioner for Suffolk County. Dr. Cantor, always a pleasure to speak with you, and I hope you come back again in the near future.
I will do, and thank you so much for having me. Appreciate it.
Right now, we're going to look at the city of Stamford. Stamford is the third largest city in Connecticut, according to population. And if you've been there lately, you'll have noticed a redeveloped and vibrant downtown and a massive housing construction project not too far from the train station. It's over by the Sound in the South End. Mayor David Martin joins us for a few minutes. Mayor, thank you for your time.
Well, I'm pleasure to be here, Ron, and Happy New Year to you and to your listeners.
Happy New Year to you, sir. The city, as I said, has undergone quite the change the last few years. You have a thriving downtown, a nice mix of residential, retail, and offices, new housing by the waterfront. But Stamford, like many of the cities in Connecticut and the Northeast, had some really bleak years. How'd the turnaround happen?
Well, you know, first of all, and not to take an argument with you, but the city is both changing dramatically in certain areas and being a vast success, but at other areas, it's actually rather stable. You know, Stamford is a very diverse city from all different types of incomes and ethnic backgrounds and religious choices, and it actually extends to housing as well. We are physically a large city, and we have beautiful homes on the waterfront. We have affordable housing. We have people like me who are forest critters. But to your point, yes, we are doing phenomenally well in our downtown and our South End. And I would challenge you to think of it this way. Many other cities in all of New England, not just here in Connecticut, but all of New England, are struggling with how the world continues to change. And if we were to back up, you know, 10 or 15 years ago, and we saw that our city was on decline, as many cities are, if we were intelligent and thoughtful about this, and rather than just politically yelling at one another, would have said, okay, well, how do we attract people to come to our city? And there are several different choices that one could make depending upon where your strengths are and what your financial situation. But here in Stamford, we have to attract the future workforce for our city in order to keep the businesses here, to keep the small businesses here. And so the question is, how do we attract that future workforce? And they tend to be millennials, but not exclusively. And we've set about on a course where we've got the Downtown Special Services District and the largest South End developer, BLT, who are working to make this a better place to live, and specifically offering the types of things and promoting the types of things that are attractive to people to come and want to live here. So what are the things I'm talking about? Well, I'm talking about the Live at 5 shows that happen over the summer that are on Wednesdays and Thursday nights. I'm talking about best bartender contests that are happening on the waterfront in the South End. I'm talking about Christmas tree lightings, and every community has those. We've got a slew of them, but we also have Santa jumping off the Landmark building, and we have thousands of people with their families and their kids that come to want to see that. We've got the balloon parade that happens a week before Thanksgiving. Again, you know, people coming from all around, and they're saying, hey, this is an exciting community. They've got entertainment. They've got excitement. They've got wonderful places to go in their parks. And they're coming here to live because this is a great place to live. And that's kind of the choice. You have to look forward and say where are your opportunities and take advantage of your opportunities, or you can spend your time looking back, wishing the way the world was the way that it used to be. And unfortunately, you know, I reminisce about all sorts of things, and those memories are important to me, and I cherish them and want to keep them. But I can't live my life entirely in memories. And I would tell you that as this city, we're looking forward and we're making it a great place to live, and people are coming here. Now, when we might have said only millennials, but it turns out when you get a vibrant, active life for people in the city, it's not just the millennials. The empty nesters are moving into our downtown, and the empty nesters are moving into the South End. And some of them are coming from within Stamford, and some of them are coming from the surrounding communities because essentially, hey, they've reached that point in their life where they just don't feel that they need three or four bedrooms and two or three or four bathrooms, and they have to put up with the snow, and they got to put up with the well water, and they got to put up with all the other issues that private home ownership has with it. It has its advantages and it has its challenges. And so the empty nesters are moving down as well. And that's the vibrancy that's going on in Stamford, which is causing our population to grow. It, interestingly enough, the objective is not to grow the population. The objective is to make this a place where people want to live. And the result of that, we end up with that sort of vibrancy and developers anxious to build more housing to provide apartments for people who want to live here.
I know a number of boomers who are doing just what you said. They are selling their homes and they're moving into places such as downtown Stamford. But also, do you find that they're heading toward the South End?
It's a mix. Some are heading towards the south end. It tends to be more expensive, but they enjoy those waterfront views. Others are saying, no, we want the more downtown because there are some free classes going on at UConn that older boomers now want to take advantage of, or they want to go to the library, which is in the downtown, or they want to go to the symphony, and if the symphony's not doing a symphony, they've got a rock concert. And so they have that downtown orientation, and others want the views of the south end. I'm seeing them go to both places.
You mentioned before about the millennials. We've done a number of programs about them and about their needs and their wants. One of the big things is affordable housing. Does Stamford have enough affordable housing that the millennials can call it home?
Well, there's two stories to that question about affordable housing, and it's kind of interesting. First of all, and this is not well recognized, but Stamford provides more affordable housing than Greenwich and Norwalk combined. Greenwich and Norwalk have a population a little bit larger than the city of Stamford, but we provide more affordable housing than both of those combined. Oh, and incidentally, while we're talking about we provide more than, we'll also throw in Darien and New Canaan. So we've got Greenwich, Norwalk, New Canaan, Darien, Owen Westport, and Fairfield, and Easton, and Weston, and Wilton, and Ridgefield, and Bethel. In fact, we provide more affordable housing than all of the communities combined between Stamford up to Danbury and Stamford out to Bridgeport. All of them combined, our percentage is much higher, and yet that isn't enough. And one of my concerns is that Stamford can't carry the burden for affordable housing for all of Lower Fairfield County. And interestingly enough, so and incidentally, not only provide more, but we have built more, largely because of the development boom that's happening here in apartments and other forms of housing. But the other part of this is that if you go back to the basic laws of supply and demand, if there's a huge demand, prices are going to go up. I don't care whether you're a small homeowner that needs to rent the room in the back. If you can charge more, you're going to charge more, or if you're a big property owner with a big apartment building, you're going to charge more. If the demand outstrips the supply, you charge more, and it becomes less affordable. The answer then, and I'm not don't misconstrue what I'm about ready to say, is that those that are trying to constrain supply because they say it's too expensive, the answer is really no. Let more building occur. Let's put up more housing opportunities. We've made this a wonderful place to live. More people want to live here. If you want to have it to be more affordable, which we all do, then you need to provide more housing opportunities. They kind of want to go in the wrong direction a lot of times. They think constraining the supply and making it more difficult is somehow going to make it more affordable. It usually doesn't. It makes it more expensive. And that sort of contradictory ideas sometimes lost on people. But I will tell you, right now there is a supply shortage. The housing demand in these apartments is high. The rents are high, and we are providing the quality of life such that people want that. So there you go. I think really Fairfield County needs to be considering about, with the demands in Fairfield County, should we be providing more housing? Now here's the other duality that's going on, is that single-family homes out in the suburbs here are not accelerating in their prices. And that's sort of the kind of confounding thing, is that the urban life is in high demand, and it's in high demand nationwide. It's high demand here. The suburban life doesn't have the same level of demand it used to be, and part of it's just what you said earlier. The millennials are choosing to move into the urban setting where they have more access to resources and entertainment and all the other things that they want in life without having to spend as much on cars and without having to spend as much on dealing with the snow and if the gutter is working right and all those things. And so all of that comes together, whereas we have in one place booming demand and higher prices that the developers are responding to, and at the same time throughout Fairfield County, the single-family homes aren't accelerating in their values quite as fast.
Mayor, I want to get to transportation in just one moment. Have you spoken with the mayor of Bridgeport, Joe Ganim, who is on our program about a month or so ago? Have you spoken with him about planning together? The reason I ask that is that it appears that if the offices and the jobs are in Stamford and there is affordable housing in Bridgeport, you can come up with a plan to help both cities, regionalism, if you will.
The regionalism topic gets very confrontational in a hurry. So, Ron, I'm going to duck that one for a moment here in the interest of time, but we'll get back and we'll talk about that more. But in fact, I have a meeting that I'm going to be setting up with the Mayor Gannon from Bridgeport to really talk about the whole transportation infrastructure. I don't think there's anyone who doesn't understand the need to improve the Metro North I-95 corridor in Fairfield County. And that works to the benefit of the state, it works to the benefit of Stamford, and it works to the benefit of every community along that line. There are two things that I've basically been initiating, which are kind of moving along in a positive direction. One is a group that I call the Fairfield Five, which is the five major cities in Lower Fairfield, Connecticut, that commercially have an ability to compete to bring businesses from Manhattan or Northern New Jersey or Long Island or Westchester or whatnot. And those five communities are Greenwich, Stamford, Norwalk, Westport, and Fairfield. And all those communities have net inbound, and they all have the ability to attract businesses from those areas. And we're trying to talk about how do we work collectively to compete better to bring businesses which bring jobs and bring additional economic activity and help pay the bills in the long run. So we're working on that plan. The other plan that I'm working on is how do we combine the transportation planning organizations along the Metro North I-95 corridor. And we actually have three different planning organizations, one the Lower Fairfield County, of which Stamford is at the center. We have the, I don't remember the name of it, but it's basically where Bridgeport is at the center. And then the third one is where New Haven is at the center. But at that corridor, we should probably combine those three planning organizations to better enable us to compete, to get federal monies to improve Metro North. And so we're talking about what we call the MPO consolidation. And that's a large part of what I want to talk to Mayor Gannon about. His needs and his opportunities are very different than the city of Stamford in economic development. But along the transportation corridor, I think our needs are exactly the same. I need the connections up to Bridgeport and up to New Haven. The state needs those connections. And I don't think I need to explain anyone that it just seems to take longer and longer to get from one place to another on Metro North. And that's why I was so pleased to hear Governor Lamont yesterday. I went up to hear his inaugural address to the legislature, mm-hmm. and one of the things that he endorsed is what we call 30-30-30. And what that is it should take 30 minutes for an express train between New Haven and Hartford. It's all very good, but more importantly for us, 30 minutes from New Haven to Stamford, and 30 minutes from Stamford to Grand Central. And I think that would just fundamentally change the whole dynamics of Stamford and all of Lower Fairfield County. I think in terms of economic opportunities, it would instantly provide a buoyancy for the state. And while I'm at it, it isn't just getting from Stamford down to Grand Central. It's also how do we get from Stamford to Penn Station? And there's work going on to improve the what they call the Hell's Gate line, because there's a body of water that goes over called Hell's Gate that would improve that access so that we would have more like Metro North service all the way to Penn Station.
Mayor, we have about 3 minutes left. I just want to stay with transportation for just one moment, because with the millennials, as you mentioned, many of them move downtown and they don't want cars. They want to get around with Uber or Lyft or taxis, but also they want to walk. They want those bike paths. They want to be able to get to the Stamford train station and just hop on wherever they go. How are you accommodating that? How are you planning for the future to say, yes, we're going to have these available for you?
Well, that, in fact, is one of the large challenges. Our roads, like most urban areas in New England, weren't built with that in mind. From the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, it was all about automobile traffic, and it was all about suburban living. Now we're finding this urbanization, and it's exactly what you say, Ron, the millennials, but it's also the empty nesters. It's also the baby boomers and even older. They want a safe, walkable environment. that safety means that they're safe from other cars. That means they're safe just walking around. We have the safest city in New England, so we've got that. But we've got a long way to go because our roads haven't been designed that way. I've completely reorganized our transportation function since I've gotten in, put additional resources into transportation, and we're working on those very issues. One of the things is that we are talking about, not we, Stanford, we the nation, we the world, is talking about autonomous vehicles. And one of those things would be, is there a potential for autonomous shuttles that would increase the frequency and the reliability of service, where people can basically just hop on and hop off buses on a relatively frequently basis and you know, maneuver between the downtown and the train station and the South End with relatively ease and relatively low expense and safer potentially than what we currently have. And we are participating with a state demonstration project, and I will only tell you that so far you don't see anything on the streets. We're still talking about how do we get to the leading edge of this so that Stamford and other communities in Connecticut aren't left behind while other cities across this country are planning for autonomous vehicles to do exactly what you say. How do we better facilitate people who just want to walk or bike or just hop on a bus and get rid of that very expensive car, expensive to park, expensive to insure, expensive to maintain, expensive to buy, and it turns out they don't need it. If they're close enough and you have good, affordable and good, safe public transit that's reliable and fairly frequent. And that's what we're working on. We got a long way to go, but that's the goal to get there.
It's the state's third largest city. The mayor is David Martin, and Mayor, I'd love to have you come in sometime in the near future, sit down with us for an hour, and we'll really get into the whole regionalism talk.
Well, I'd be happy to come in, Ron, and again, Happy New Year, and we'll make that part of our New Year's resolution.
That sounds great. Mayor, thank you. We appreciate your time today.
Thank you.
And that's it for our show today. Tomorrow we'll be talking about the Green New Deal. Julie Ferdino is our engineer. Our associate producers, Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari, Carrie Frank is the digital editor, Ann Lopez is our producer, and Terry Sheridan is the news director. I'm Ron Ropiak. Thanks to all of you for being part of The Full Story.